that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape, well, you better hit the
Gymwits,
Gymwits. That's right, man.
Welcome to the Gymwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.
So I made a terrible mistake last night.
What was it?
I hadn't really eaten all day. I had a small veggie patty sandwich earlier in the day, and that's pretty much it. So it was late at night. I had worked all day, and then I went to see my girlfriend for a little bit. So by the time I got in my car to go home, I was famished, and we know what happens when you're famished, right? You make bad
poor
decisions.
Choices. Yeah.
Right. So granted, I had it, calorically, I hadn't had many for the day, so it wasn't really about that, but I was driving on 10th Avenue, and I passed Artichoke Pizza, and it's some of my favorite pizza. I think that Artichoke has gotten so much better, right? I remember when I first had it, it just wasn't all that great, and then they just refined it, and they got better, especially their vodka slice. And if you know Artichoke, they don't give you small slices. They give you these massive slices. So I got two of those vodka slices, and I ate them probably at around 11, 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
Hey. Those things sit in your stomach, and oh, did I pay for it. In the middle of the night, I woke up.
Okay.
Crazy heartburn, and not fun. I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Spare the listeners the details, I think, from there. okay, well, I was going to tell you, I I'm a coffee guy.
Yeah.
Like, but I drink lots of coffee. Not that I am a connoisseur at all. But I've been limiting myself to one cup
a
day.
Quantity sore.
Yeah. No, I would normally have like four cups a day, but I'm having one cup a day. My cup in the morning. Outside, like I because you're looking at me right now. I'm drinking a cup of coffee, but I won't turn down a cup of coffee. But I've been good about one cup a day, and it's actually been fine. Like coffee's good for you, as far as everyone knows now.
Moderate amount is good for you. Yeah.
But I found myself reliant on it, and I drink way too much, and I found that I'm really not anymore. And the reason why is I had this thing in my mouth, and I had to go on antibiotics, and the doctor basically was like, don't drink coffee and alcohol. And it's like, I can't not drink coffee, but I'll do one a day for the duration of the antibiotics. I just found, I don't really need it. So it's been fine. It's like a cyst that I'm still going to have to get removed.
Let's just spare our listeners the details.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, good one. All right.
So when Ryan first told me about our guest, you know, my eyes immediately rolled. I was like, but I'll admit, this was one of my favorite interviews. She was totally awesome and very knowledgeable, and I'm very glad we did it. So now, Ryan, put in your disclaimer.
Yeah, so disclaimer, some adult content. There's nothing too explicit, but definitely if you listen to the podcast with young kids, which I don't know who would listen with young kids, but maybe just have it on in the background or whatever. Or maybe your kids love the Gymwits. Either way, if you have young kids and you don't want to expose them to some sexual content, or if you're an adult that would rather not listen to that, just be aware that there will be sexual content. Again, it's not too explicit, but that's going to be the podcast for today. So I would say ahead of time, if you're uncomfortable with it, or you're around kids that you don't want to listen to it, maybe turn it off and listen to it at a later time. But otherwise, without further ado,
here is our interview with Emmeline Peaches. Hey everyone, we're here with Emmeline Peaches. How's it going, Emmeline?
Very well, thank you. How is it with you?
Not bad, not bad. So I hear clearly you have a British accent. Where do you live?
I live in Devon, which is in the southwest of the UK, actually. Yeah, oh, nice. Right by the sea. Yeah, lovely.
Very cool. I visited London how many years ago was it? I think it was New Year's of 2001. Unfortunately, I didn't get to travel far outside the city limits, but one day I would like to return.
London is lovely, though. You've got so much going on there. Such a vibrant place, really. The culture is fantastic.
Yeah, London's probably my favorite city, and if my wife would let me, I would move there in an instant. And I like that it's kind
of... Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I love that it's a big city like New York, but it's so old and there's so much history there that it's just something you can't compete with. So I just like that balance. I think if things get much worse here in America, I may be able to convince her to pack up and move out to London, but...
No comment on that particular situation.
it's funny, and we generally don't get very political, but in forums and everything I read, people in the UK sort of complain about very similar things that we complain about here in the United States. So what I've heard.
I mean, you must have the news difference must be quite interesting perspective wise, because obviously I don't have any clue how UK news is being reported there, and I suppose vice versa. So that's always something to think about, perspective, really, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting. I travel a good deal. I probably do a couple of international trips every year. And what's interesting is we, for the most part, Americans have no idea about what's going on internationally, unless they're actively
watching the BBC is the yeah. most of what we get.
And most people don't watch it. But what I've noticed is traveling abroad, how in tune people abroad are to American politics is pretty incredible. Even more so the last few years than maybe 5-10 years ago. It's just strange how I can meet people abroad who are almost as in tune with what's going on here as we are, but we have no clue what's going on outside of the US for the most part.
Oh yeah, daily. I mean, turn on any news channel and you'll have some US news on there here in the UK. It's we're always aware of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so maybe we should get started the interview. I'm sure you have many awesome things to talk to us about. So, Emmeline, the first thing we always ask is about your fitness background. Tell us about your fitness or exercise background or sports or anything of that nature.
Certainly. So, for most of my life, I absolutely hated fitness, if you'd believe it. I used to avoid physical exercise, the PE classes in my school. And at one point, my secondary school, which is, I suppose, like high school in the US, had a chance of either becoming a sports academy or an arts academy. And it became a sports academy. And I wept on that day. I was lamenting so much. But what it did mean is that I got a chance to try out the gym. They built a gym, and I found that it was one of the things I actually really enjoyed. But I kind of left it there, didn't really go into it much further, and was obese for most of my childhood and most of my mid-20s. And then I started doing a PhD, and PhDs are fantastic for all sorts of procrastination. Mm-hmm. One of which was starting an adult review blog, and the other that came out of that really was an interest in actually pursuing fitness and exploring my body in other ways. So in 2015, in October, I decided to take up walking, just straight walking and a little bit of yoga. And for that first period of time, I couldn't even hold a downward dog for 10 seconds without being out of breath. I was exhausted. But 2 years later, I found that I loved fitness. I was really into strength training, really into jogging. And I actually completed my first marathon in October of this year. So just 2 years down the line. So quite the transformation, really.
Wow. That's so great to hear. And it really shows that you don't have to be a lifelong fitness fanatic to get into it. You can really get into it at any time and make the strides that you're going to make.
Oh, definitely. There's no reason not to start at any point in your life. If you want to do something, you can go for it completely.
So you mentioned your adult review blog. Can you tell us what got you interested in starting that blog? Like, what kind of turned you onto that path?
Ooh, that's an interesting question, actually. Sexual health was a real big thing for me. So when I was quite young, sexually legal in the UK, but still a teenager, I discovered that I had something called vaginismus, which is a muscular contraction of the pelvic floor muscles, which means that sex is either extremely painful or completely impossible. So through going through that, overcoming that and conquering that, I realized that I quite liked sex. I quite liked the various sexual aids that were out there, the various different exercises to do with sex that could help you. And I decided that I would like to write about my experiences and share them. I mean, at the time I was doing a PhD, so I was writing anyway, but I needed something on the side of the academic work that was less heavy, but still something I felt passionate about. So I channeled it into that, and that's really where it went from there.
So what was your PhD in?
Art history, would you believe?
Okay,
so
wow.
The humanities. Yeah. I looked at representations of dogs in Victorian Britain, and I blog about sex and do a lot of fitness.
That's awesome.
Quite diverse.
That's great. So you contacted, so you'd been listening to an episode of the podcast, and I believe Justin had made a comment referring to sex and fitness. And So I thought, you know, it's a great topic. So I guess the obvious first question relating to that is, I guess, does a person's fitness have a very clear correlation with their kind of sexual health?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I believe that the particular episode was to do with fitness as you get older. Mm-hmm. And the clearest correlation that we have, that studies have undertaken, is into the benefits of fitness and for sexual activity as you get older. And what it's found is that men and women who have good or excellent health, who pursue a lifestyle that involves fitness, actually tend to have healthier sex lives as they get older. And what the study tended to call their sexually active life expectancy was drastically increased. The older you got, basically, the more benefits you could reap from fitness in terms of the bedroom as well.
What are some of those benefits?
Well, there's the practical ones. So you would have things like having the stamina to keep on having sex, being able to get into certain positions. Obviously, if you're neglecting your fitness, then as you get older, especially, you're going to find that you're just not able to get into some of the postures that you used to be able to enjoy. And keeping up energy levels as well. We all know fitness is great for that. And you do need to have a certain amount of gusto when you're going into sexual activity. So it maintains all of that to allow people to then feel confident and physically capable to keep their sexual activity going in later life.
And is there also a kind of a direct correlation between the fitness and also just what a person's sex drive? Like, does being unfit have an effect on just their drive to be sexually active?
So it can go both ways. And it really depends on the amount of fitness that you do. So if you're engaging with the recommended amount of fitness, you have more energy, and that translates in youth. But what you may sometimes find as well is that if you do a lot of exercise, maybe too much exercise in a day, you might feel at the end of the day that you're just too sore or too exhausted to have sex. So it's really about finding the perfect balance for you. But the studies, unfortunately, are limited in terms of what fitness can do for sex, but they're quite positive generally for health. And we know that that can maintain, obviously, a good sex life as a result.
Now, one would think, in men at least, that testosterone is directly related to sex drive. And we think that, I don't know, what's the science behind it? Does lifting weights increase, or certain types of fitness increase testosterone? So we would think that, but I guess that the jury is still out as far as...
Not too sure about the studies on the correlation between obviously lifting and testosterone. I imagine there would be some, but the thing is that testosterone isn't a necessary prerequisite for libido in all cases. Mm. And even if people are lacking in testosterone or in libido, it can be, like fitness, trained up with time and persistence and consistency. And I think that's where you can also find that there are quite a lot of transferable life lessons between both sexual activity and fitness as an activity.
Yeah. So is that, are there kind of like is that something to do? Like, if somebody wants to, I guess, quote unquote, like, you know, or improve their sex lives, is there a way to approach it like exercise, where it's kind of you progressive and you have goals and you work towards that goal? Like, is that kind of something that people can and should actually kind of work towards?
Absolutely. I would completely advocate that. And one of the things that I've actually found is that by doing more fitness, I tend to be better equipped and more confident when it comes to sex and the ways that I want to move forward with various different sexual activities. And when it comes to my sex life, I can also take some of the positives that you would naturally get from that and apply it to my fitness. So it's interchangeable. And just something as simple as goal setting, like you said, and expecting a certain amount of progression over a certain time. If you're fitness based, you know that you're not going to be able to go from 0 to 100 straight away in anything, really. You're not going to be able to deadlift at your maximum capacity the moment that you start picking up a barbell. So knowing that goals take time and planning it out and being realistic with your expectations might mean that, for example, someone with no libido won't feel completely frustrated because they're like, oh, well, I'm not at that full capacity. I don't want sex as much as I want. Therefore, I'm a no-hoper. They might think, well, no, I know that if I put my mind to something, something especially involving my body, then I can begin to implement a plan that will help me get to where I need to be. And you can actually really apply a lot of the same steps. It's training.
So related to that, not completely the same thing, but related, have you found that there are specific exercises that one can practice in the gym that can directly help with sexual performance?
A lot of people recommend yoga. There are some really good yoga and stretching postures, obviously, okay, that will help with sex. And the rest depends on what you want to do. So, for example, if you're heavy into BDSM, bondage, and that sort of thing, you might look into, for example, strengthening your arms. If you want to do certain positions and you know that they target certain body parts, then it really is just a case of training those body parts like you would in any form of fitness where you're thinking, I want to build strength here. I know what I want it for, and that's how I'm going to go about it. So then you take the exercises, the tried and tested ones that already work, and you can use those, and they will manifest benefits in the bedroom as well.
Great. So I guess almost the flip side of that, it's been a little bit of a fad here. I think it died off a little bit. I don't know how it is in the UK, but there was maybe about 10 years or so, there was a lot of talk about sex as exercise. The calories burned, that it functions as exercise. What do you think about that? Is sex really exercise? Does it depend on the type of sex? What do you think about that?
So sex is obviously something that as you go into it, your heart rate increases and you will reach a peak and you are doing a certain amount of physical activity. And we have found in studies that that activity is good for your heart health. It does have some benefits. But in terms of being an actual exercise, I know it's called sexercise sometimes. Sex alone isn't going to get you to your fitness goals. It won't even necessarily count towards your moderate intensity aerobic activity that is recommended for the week. But what it will do is provide supplemental benefits, we'll call them.
And so I guess another exercise that's commonly associated with sex are Kegel exercises. So can you tell us, like, what are they and why, if they are important, why are they so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So Kegel or Kegel exercises are really, really important. And what they essentially are exercises that allow us to strengthen our pelvic floor muscles. Now, the pelvic floor muscles play quite an important role in our body. If you have weak pelvic floor muscles, then you may find that you're leaking urine. You can't control your bladder. You might even have fecal incontinence, so stool as well. And one of the other things that comes with a weak pelvic floor muscle or weak pelvic floor muscles is your sex life just isn't as good because you don't have the muscle control that allows you to achieve those really strong contractions that come with orgasms. That's essentially what a climax is. It's your muscles contracting and releasing alongside the other physiological and psychological things that are going on in your body. So you definitely need to keep up Kegel exercises if you want to make sure that you don't have any urinary problems in later life and that you can reach your sexual peak.
So now it's not the most masculine exercise, but is it something that men should do?
Men and women, definitely. And yeah. Runners in particular.
Great. So shifting gears for a little bit, can you talk to us a little bit about the body positivity movement?
Yes, absolutely. So as I'm sure you're aware, the body positivity movement is all about loving and accepting your body at all shapes and sizes on all terms. So we all have those days, obviously, where we're not feeling it. We look at ourselves and we're like, oh, well, I could do with maybe, you know, toning the middle section, or maybe I don't like the way my thighs are and stuff. And body positivity really encourages you to embrace your body wherever it is. You can still change it if you want. You can still feel unhappy with it. But it's just knowing that, well, this is the body I have. There is no such thing as a perfect body. And it's the only one we've got at the end of the day. So move forward together with it and really find your confidence with yourself.
Okay, so I guess the natural conversation that comes out of this, and as the Gymwits, we are in no way into body shaming or even telling people what they should do with their bodies. I'm a firm believer that it's your body, you do what you want with it. I don't even believe that any government has the right to tell me what I can put in my body. If you want to, you know, smoke crack all day, I believe that that's your right. But, you know, not
yes,
everyone...
Yes, you do you.
Not everyone will agree with me on that. But... where is the fine line, or is there a line at all, with embracing your body, being confident in that, but maybe using it as an excuse to be obese or to not diet or work out or eat healthy and just saying, well, it's my body, I'm confident in that, and it may encourage other people that may be unhealthy to continue unhealthy habits?
Absolutely. I think there are always going to be people out there who want to find excuses. I think there are always going to be people out there who maybe use certain movements, any movement, as a coping mechanism or a reason to procrastinate or perhaps not do what they know deep down is good for them. We all do it in various aspects of life, and body positivity can provide one of those avenues that people pursue that. But at the same time, it can also give us the confidence needed to move forward. So, for example, one of the things I see a lot nowadays is that people who embrace the body positive movement, even larger individuals especially, suddenly get the confidence that they need to go into a gym because they feel empowered. They feel like, well, my body has a right to exist, and it has a right to exist in all places, including in the gym and exercising. Whereas before, they might have felt too vulnerable or perhaps too undesirable to be in those spaces.
I'm curious what it's like in the UK, because in the United States, and this is just sort of a sidebar, we found that as of a few years back, the obesity rate for adult men was 35% and 40% among women. I'm not sure what the teenager and kids are. Do you know what the rates in the UK are?
I know that we are one of the most obese countries currently in the EU. Let's not discuss that one either.
Okay.
Obesity is a real hot topic. It's on the news quite constantly. The big, I suppose, media devil right now is sugar. I think it's always going to be that to some extent, but
sure.
there's always an issue with size and obesity and how we can really manage that as a nation.
That was a great point that I never even really considered, that in addition to being kind of in addition to kind of being a little bit more confident and comfortable in your own skin, that would allow you to, you know, allow you to go to the gym without feeling insecure. Because I definitely have worked with clients and met people who will stay away from the gym mostly because they're just insecure. They feel like everyone's looking at them. And at the end of the day, most of us, when you're at the gym, you're focused on yourself. You're not thinking about anybody else. But yeah, people get so into themselves and so can be so kind of insecure that I do see that benefit of just being more confident and just comfortable that I, you know, never considered.
Absolutely. I mean, going to a gym for the first time can be an intimidating process for anyone. But if you feel like, or if you've been perhaps ridiculed for most of your life due to your size, and you have an assumption that a person of your size doesn't deserve to be or shouldn't be in the gym because people are going to think, well, why are they there, sort of thing, then knowing that, no, I have a body, I'm going to own it. And even to some degree, having an active sex life, feeling sexually confident and desirable in yourself, secure, means that you can take those first steps into the gym with at least a sense that your body is going to improve from it and that you have the confidence to allow that.
Great. So another recent fad that we've seen are sex-infused group fitness classes, like pole fitness, certain dances that might be sexually suggestive. Do you see these types of classes as more of a fad or something that is legitimate fitness and that will last?
Ah, that's an interesting question. And it's quite funny that you say that because I actually tried when I was at one of the adult conferences that I attended a steel and stilettos fitness workout, which was basically centered around you either did it barefoot or in heels, and it involved a lot of squats, a lot of dancing around chairs, a lot of motions with whips, and I do have to say it was quite an intense leg workout. Obviously there are different degrees of intensity when you're going into a fitness class, but for someone who is interested in that, I would say that it's a fad to some degree. It's something that you're going into for a specific reason that motivates you because it's appealing to a very niche and perhaps sometimes fleeting demographic. But I'd say whatever motivates you to move your body, to get in that class, to try fitness, is a good thing. And obviously pole fitness, it's been around for quite a few years now, so I'd say that's gaining traction. And we know by now that the pole can be a very good fitness tool.
Sure. And of course the gym wits would agree with that for the most part, that if something gets you in the gym, if something gets you in a class, that's a good thing, because a lot of people have trouble exercising because they just don't have fun, they don't enjoy it. So if you can find something that stimulates you in one way or another and it gets you to exercise, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, body and sexual empowerment, if you bring that to fitness, exercise is something that you manage to maintain for a certain degree of, I suppose, enjoyability. You're not going to keep on going to do something you hate. So by adding in those elements that you know excite you in maybe more ways than one, you can keep on going. You can maintain it even on those days when you're like, oh, I'm not feeling up to it. You can think, well, no, but I do love it when I get there, honestly, at the end of the day.
So I want to shift gears a bit to your work or your blog. So it is really interesting, and it's more than just, I guess, a review site, because you actually do post your own articles about different topics. So there are a couple of topics that caught my eye and wanted to discuss that somewhat maybe tenuously related to fitness. Well, one is very directly related to fitness. I guess the first one is about whether, like, kind of this the trope that sex will lead to a heart attack, and whether or not that's a myth or true.
No, sex is most likely not going to lead to a heart attack. And that was recently debunked in a rather extensive study looking into it a bit more. But what you'll find is that those that already have a risk of heart attacks, that have heart disease, might need to take it just a little bit easier directly after sex. There was some correlation that a very small sample of people did have heart attacks directly after sex who already had a heart condition. But for most of us, it will be fine. And as I said earlier, it actually improves heart health. So it's sex is a preventative heart health method.
And the title was Why Condoms May Not Be Vegan.
Yes. So I am vegan myself, and I'm very concerned with not just veganism and condoms, but also the general, I suppose, ingredients and materials that some condoms can have and involve, and the processes of testing. So what you'll find is, obviously, most of us think, oh, a condom, it's absolutely fine. And it's like, well, yeah, most of the time it will be. But what about the lubricant that they add to that condom? Because just like in the fitness industry, you can get some items, some, I suppose, accessories to your exercise, your activity, that is legitimate and it's useful and you should use it. We should all definitely employ safer sex barriers. But then sometimes you get ingredients added like spermicides or something called parabens, which have links to cancer, tenuous links, but it might not be something you want to put in your body. There are things like glycerin, which might cause infections in certain women. And once you see that all of these things are added to perhaps the lubricant on a condom, you really have to consider what's going into it, how it might impact your health, and what might be the best choices. So for vegan people, obviously they want to make sure that the condom is ethically tested, the lubricant has materials that aren't going to aggravate them, and that they feel good about how they're going forward with that. And not all condoms are vegan, unfortunately.
I think that's actually very good information to know and to consider, and not just for people that are vegan, but for everyone, especially if certain lubricants and things added to condoms can cause infections and stuff like that. That is very good information to know. So I'm gonna apologize in advance for what I'm about to ask. It might be very stupid, or maybe it just be partially a joke. Maybe we could laugh it off. But is oral sex vegan?
It depends on the lubricant, but oral sex itself is completely vegan, yes.
Okay. Then the next question that is actually a serious question and almost of a political nature. I'd just like to get your opinion on it. Is abortion anti-vegan?
What?
Well, oh, careful there.
I know it's a serious question, but I've been wondering it. And I did a little reading on it. I just wasn't sure, and I know that people stand on all sides of the spectrum. I'm just curious what the some thoughts are and what you might think about that.
I think that abortion is a choice-based thing, and that if you're vegan, you might choose one way or the other, but I personally wouldn't see abortion as anti-vegan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. I did not see that question coming. So
just throwing it.
Yeah. So I guess my one question. So I've tried a few VR like video games, and I've been amazed by the kind of immersion and how realistic they are. So like the obvious next step immediately is, well, what would VR porn be like? So I guess my question is, as somebody who reviews things like of this nature, have you ever tried, I guess, VR porn? And is it something that will actually be like the next big thing? Or is it, you know, again, kind of something that'll just be like a fad?
Yes, I've tried VR porn, and it's interesting. What I will say is that the main company doing it right now do so with devices that synchronize to the actual porn itself. So, for example, if you have a penis, then you may find that they have a masturbation sleeve that you can use. And what will essentially happen is the motion of the porn will be synchronized with the motions of the device, and obviously you can see it on your VR system. Now, depending on the pornographers, you can either get just a straight up view or you can get the full 360. It's all about what they provide there. For females, you're usually linked to a vibrator, which is obviously quite different to frosting, but a lot of women prefer and indeed might need vibrations in order to achieve ultimate sexual pleasure anyway.
Sounds interesting, and I could certainly see it be an enormous moneymaker if it was able to be produced in a way that was, I guess, inexpensive or just as accessible as, say, porn on the internet is.
There's a lot of potential there, and not just that. I think that VR could obviously go into cam girls, so women who obviously do sexual performances online for payment, I think, as well, because the company that currently do the main VR pornography are also a company that try to link people via wireless Wi-Fi in relationships. So you can have a chat, and you can actually have sex with your long-distance relationship spouse through their devices. They synchronize. And if VR was brought to that, just imagine the bond and the sexual communication that could be made.
What's sad is when I was in high school, I had the idea for that. not with the VR, but just,
we all had the idea for that.
Just like connecting people through Wi-Fi. I was like, that'll make millions of dollars, but too late.
Too late, yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah.
So I guess one question. So with the holiday season, what are some interesting gifts that one could buy? And just to be clear, it would be that one partner can get for their partner, and not like not in the Matt Lauer, you know, TV personality getting it for an employee gross kind of way.
Well, first I would say that I am not at all against people buying presents for friends and family as well, if they want, as long as they know the person and they know that they're comfortable with that sort of stuff. So don't rule it out. Just maybe don't have a boss give it to you, or give it to a work colleague. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a partner. But I think the very important thing in all instances, as with obviously fitness gift giving, I know you did an episode on this, is it's important to know the person, to know what they like, know what they do, and to perhaps have a really good idea of their sexual preferences. So this can either come about through conversation. You could just say to them, oh, you know, I'm enjoying this right now. If it's your partner, you can say, this, I'm really liking this. What are you fancying, sort of thing? And they might tell you. If it is a partner and you know them very well, you might already know what sort of toys they like. But I'd say go with either something that you know that they enjoy, or go with a introductory kit. Just make sure that, again, as with the lubricant, as with condoms, the materials that are involved are safe for use, because not all sex toy materials are. And really do your research. I think with anything like this, fitness, sex, anything, making sure that you know the professional opinion can make the world of difference.
Great information. Now, I have a question that's of a more of a social nature. Maybe so that we'll close with this, and then of course I want to ask you about your website and any way people can contact you.
Yeah.
So the traditional view on this is that you do not really talk to children of various, you know, until they're significantly older, about sex, and perhaps even try to shelter a kid. And I'm not talking about pornography, but just about the concepts in general. While now, over the last however many years, the views are changing for some people. I guess it would be more of a liberal view that sex is something you should talk to your children about, as long as it's done in an educated way. I'd like to hear your opinion on maybe the line of what's okay to talk to your children about, maybe based on their age. And is it something that parents and teachers should talk to children about? How important is sexual education?
So I would, as you said, always advocate for age-appropriate sexual education.
Okay.
And not just age-appropriate sexual education, but age-appropriate relationship education in general. So for example, if you've got a young child, it can be things as simple as if a relative wants to give them a kiss or a hug, just say to them, are you comfortable with this kiss or hug? If they say no, just they don't have to do it. That's okay. That's your boundaries. You don't want that hug. How about a handshake or something like that? And you, from there, you can teach consent. And as they get older, you can bring into it, you know, how your body is your rules. And this gives them the confidence they need to go through life. And we know that this does, in some instances, help avoid things like sexual uncertainty. It will give them the information they need to perhaps avoid some of the unfortunate consent situations that might happen when you're older, the pressure that some people feel under, especially in their teenage years when it comes to sex and their body. And I think anatomy is very important. I don't think we should shy away from the anatomical terms, even from a young age. But it's important that kids also understand that discussing certain phrases, as with anything, there are environments where it's acceptable, environments where it's not. And I think that the sooner that we teach children that, the better and the stronger basis we give them for them further education and further sexual confidence.
Wow, that is great information. So, Emmeline, love to hear about where we can find you. Where can people contact you and where can they see your posts and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on my site, which is emmelinepeachesreviews.com. I'm also on Twitter at emmelinepeaches and Instagram with the same tag.
Great. Well, Emmeline Peaches, we have thoroughly enjoyed this interview. It was a blast. And you are a wealth of knowledge. And
thank you so much. Also, and do your Kegels.
Yes, yes. I taught Ryan about those a few years ago, and he scoffed at me. And now he's the one who's mentioning them. All right, Emmeline. Well, have a great... What time is it there? It's
8:47 in the evening.
So you're probably winding down a little bit. So
yeah.
Enjoy the rest of your evening, and you're welcome back anytime on the Gym Wits. And we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you so much. Maybe veganism next. You never know.
Yes. Have you heard our have you listened to any of the podcasts on veganism?
Yes, Tony, the dietitian. And I'm still waiting on the what the health, because I have views about that as well.
Oh yes, yes, yes. We'll yes. We're certainly going to do that. Well, thank you very much, and have a great night.
Okay. You too. Take care.
So we're going to take a break from talking about sex to talking about our other favorite thing, food.
So yes, we all have to eat, but in this modern world, there's a few challenges that we face. We have to do it without breaking the bank, using up all of our precious time, and of course, being able to get healthy foods into our diet.
I can't believe you forgot the most important thing, especially for you. It's got to taste good.
Absolutely.
Fortunately, Freshly has you covered. So Freshly is a meal delivery service that sends Freshly... See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
Made meals to your door, made by a chef with the help of nutritionists.
Yes, and they use all natural ingredients, no preservatives. There are vegan options. There are no peanuts. It's gluten-free for anyone that's concerned about that. And it's really easy. You just throw it in your microwave.
Yeah, and we're not going to push something that we don't believe in. And we've tried it, and the meals are really, really good. They represent a great option. I think both Justin and I have issues with either time, even if you take quality out of it, which the quality is great, we have issues when it comes to time and money, you know, for eating. You eat out and it's hard. And so, you know, these can be as little as $8.99 a meal. They're really quick to make and they're really good. It tastes like something you're getting at a restaurant or you're making at home. It's not like your standard, you know, what you would think of as something that you just throw in a microwave and make. They're actually legitimately good.
Now, I've used other meal delivery services before, the ones where you need to cook your own food, and I'm pretty knowledgeable when it comes to food preparation, and yet those still took me a long time to make. And quite frankly, some of the meals weren't that good, and oftentimes I was left with a ton of pickled radish or something that I didn't really want to eat at the end of the meal.
And of course, you're left with a ton of dishes at the end of the meal.
Don't remind me.
Well, with Freshly, you don't get any of that. You eat what's there. You throw out the container, and you're done.
Yeah, and you get a ton of options to choose from.
Yeah, there's things like veggie baked penne, buffalo chicken breast, cod cakes, Sicilian-style chicken parm.
I'm getting hungry.
Slow-cooked chili beef, chicken tikka masala, tons of options, both for lunch slash dinner, and they also have breakfast options as well. So you're really not at a loss for things to choose from.
Well, the gym wits always talk about that magic bullet. And, you know, if something's too good to be true, well...
Well, if we haven't convinced you with our words, there's not much we can do except to give you $40 off your first two orders. Hmm. So if you go to Freshly.com and enter our exclusive promo code, GYMWITS, all caps, at checkout, you'll get $40 off. So you get to try six meals for only $39. And you can decide for yourself if Freshly meets all the criteria that we set.
And that's less than $7 a meal.
Yeah, you really can't beat that. Nope. So try it out. And if you like it, then the GYMWITS via Freshly have resolved yet another problem in your life. So again, go to Freshly.com, use promo code TheGYMWITS, and try out any of a number of great meals.
And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah, see, I was right. You were, as Justin said at the top, he was totally against this interview.
I wasn't totally against it. I was rolling my eyes.
Yeah, he was rolling his eyes. But... it went really well. And I think on top of it is somebody who listens to our podcast. I think most of the time, just based on the, dealing with other people in the industry, it's hard to listen to everybody else's podcast. So most of the people that we do get on aren't necessarily big listeners of the GYMWITS. Maybe they've heard an episode here and there, but having somebody who's listened to our podcast and who could refer back was cool. In addition to having some great stuff to talk about. So I was right. then let's address your comment. So I think it's context. If we're going back to the whole abortions being vegan thing, I think it really comes down to context.
It's funny that's the one out of that entire interview, that's what you wanted to discuss.
Well, that's the most kind of controversial thing. Well, for the most part. So think that it's context. So if your idea of veganism revolves around diet, then I don't see how it is not...
I completely agree.
Then it's still vegan because it's not about your diet. It's about what you're doing with your body, and it's about, maybe it's a different moral decision, but the veganism, it kind of is outside of the scope of veganism. Now, if veganism as a diet is part of if you look at vegan as a larger ethical thing that has to do with how you treat other living beings, and you kind of broaden the scope of what veganism is to you, then I can see, I could see an argument for it. But again, it's context and it changes things. So I don't think that the two are mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I don't think being, pro-choice and being vegan are mutually exclusive. But again, it does come down to context. So if you're somebody who, if to be vegan, you have to also adhere to so many other moral kind of... you stick with a whole other set of moral values, then I can see how somebody might say that you can't. But I if you're looking at vegan as the way that I think it was initially meant to be, it's more from a diet perspective. So I don't see how it's not. I don't know
I was looking at it from more of the moral, ethical, lifestyle approach, where people that are vegan. Or these types of vegans are about the overall sanctity of life, right? And that's why they will not use or exploit any animals, right? And I guess the discussion was that, well, does the same apply for humans and for human fetuses?
Well, yeah,
an idea that I had. Yeah. I was thinking about it and I researched it, and it turns out there's a lot of discussion about with anything.
Imagine there's a huge whole debate, because then it also comes down to where do you draw the line? Is it suffering? Is it, there's a whole litany of things you can, I guess, go to. So somewhere we probably don't want to go right now, because we'll end up going longer than we already have right now for the podcast. So I think we'll leave it at that, and you can probably do the research online.
Mm-hmm. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I think Emmeline Peaches is fantastic. She's got a ton of knowledge, and she puts it across, in my opinion, in a very reasonable and intelligent way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was great. One of my favorite interviews. It was really, really fun. So hopefully we'll definitely try to get her back on.
We do the what the health.
She called us out. Review, we have to do that. That's true. We got to do the what the health review. See? We got Tony coming next week to record with us. So maybe we'll try to get that in. Well, anyway, as usual, our stuff is at thegymwits.com. Go to Freshly and use the code GYMWITS to get some meals delivered to your home. And that is it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Field, aka Chef Sonic.
We are the GYMWITS.